This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Hey everybody, this is episode number 53 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
So, Katie, it sounds like people really enjoy you and I starting off each episode with a song.
I don't know why, but yes.
I'm thinking that this needs to be a thing.
I could probably make that happen.
Okay, because I've actually been thinking about some songs that we could do. So I was thinking, like, we could do, like, and we're rolling.
Rolling.
There we go. Proud Mary. Rolling down the river. We could do that.
We could.
We could also do Turn Around.
Bright Side.
Bright Eyes.
Oh, sorry. Dude, I can't promise to be perfect. I just kind of sing whatever words I think they are.
You can promise me vocals, but you can't promise me lyrics.
Yes.
Okay.
Except to Roland. Like, Proud Mary, I can pretty much nail that one.
Okay. Chris and Hallie, can we count on you for, like, backup vocals, maybe?
Oh, for sure.
Okay, so you can do, like, the when Proud Mary really picks up and it's like, do-do-do-do-do-do, you can do that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, super. Great. Chris is like, I want no part of this. We have a very special guest with us tonight. We have moved mountains to get him here. He is a commentator extraordinaire. He is a game designer. He is a famous red mage. He is our friend Patrick Sullivan. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on the show. We've been trying so hard to get you on here.
Yeah, my work schedule in the last couple of months has been pretty rough. We're getting close to launching, and so there's been a lot of 60-hour work weeks and, you know, working well until 9 or 10 o'clock. So you and I have been talking for a while now. I wanted to come on, but finally work is slowing down, that I kind of have a regular schedule again. I can start, you know, doing some normal human being things like appearing on podcasts and such.
Yeah, you had sent me a message the other day and you were like, you know, I'm free for the month of March. And I was like, well, shit, there's only like 3 days left in March. I better get you while I can.
Yeah, we'll be, I hear we'll be mixing it up tomorrow too. Some draft action possibly.
Yes, we are going to be having one of our group drafts, which is one of the milestone goals for our Patreon, where our Patreons have a chance to actually draft with us on Magic Online, which is happening tomorrow. And I think you were the first listener to reserve their spots. We actually get to play with you, which is going to be awesome.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was a random drawing or if there was, you know, you had to wait in line or whatever, but I decided to do the best thing that I could was just contact you directly, try to get the front of the list. Looks like it worked out.
Yeah, I mean, we've been kind of, you know, maybe making it up as we go along because we're very new to Patreon and we certainly didn't expect to even really hit those goals. So it's just like, oh, shit, we have enough to do this. Okay. And so, you know, we're certainly learning as we go and you know, figuring out what works and what doesn't. And I think we kind of agreed on it was just going to be the first three or four listeners to get in touch with us and say, hey, I'm free that night and I want to do this. And you happen to be the first. So hopefully we get two or three more.
Yeah, and kudos to the four of you for the success with the Patreon. It seems like it's been very, very well received.
Yeah, we definitely didn't know what to expect going into it. And before we knew it, it just kind of took off. And, you know, we've had a couple of listeners, you know, either pull back their donations, which we understand. And apparently that's normal. But, you know, to think that we were even, you know, we started one not even thinking, you know, anybody would really want to take part in it. But it was really our listeners that wanted us to do it. They were like, we want to do more for the show. And so that inspired us to make it. And we've just been kind of riding the wave.
Yeah, I think this podcast occupies a pretty important spot in the community. And it's just good to see the response.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about you a little bit because you recently took some time away from coverage. And have you been enjoying your time away?
I have. I really needed to recharge the batteries. You know, the last 2 years I was basically full time, plus working other jobs on the side. And by the end of 2015, I mean, when I got back from the last show, the Players Championship, it probably took me a solid like 2 or 3 days before I could hold down a real conversation with my girlfriend because I was just so out of it and so burned out and so oversaturated with human beings and all the stuff that comes along with doing coverage full time. And I would like to do a little bit more probably than what I'm doing right now, but it was just good for me to take some time and recharge the batteries. I'm looking forward to this. I got covering the Invitational in a couple of weeks. I'm really looking forward to it.
Mm. I mean, and what is that lifestyle like? I mean, you were on the road. How many weekends were you gone?
I think last year I did 36 or 37 shows, and the year previous was comparable.
Wow. So you were literally almost living out of a suitcase.
Yeah. And there was a while there where I was living in San Diego, but working for Activision up in LA. So I would just pack a bag, get back from the show on Monday, pack a bag, sleep on a friend's couch up in LA, you know, drop off my dry cleaning on Tuesday, pick it up on Thursday, stuff everything in a suitcase, fly out, come back. I mean, I was in that kind of rhythm for, you know, 6 or 7 months.
Wow, that's nuts. So you've been a big supporter of us individually and also of the show. And I want to touch on that a little bit, because it'd be very easy for you to not get involved, or to, you know, kind of say, well, this doesn't affect me, and so I'm really not going to chime in on this. But you've actually been quite the opposite. You've been very vocal about equality and diversity, not only in the game, but kind of in the world at large. And I kind of want to ask you, like, what really motivates you to get involved in these discussions? Because that's kind of rare, actually.
Well, I think that conversations about equality, it's very easy, and it's appropriate even to focus on the parties that are in harm's way. But I honestly think it affects everyone. I do believe that, you know, if one person's rights or security or well-being not protected by society or the rule of law, it affects everyone. On a personal level, not like dudes don't come out of the womb as feminists. Like, if I looked and read the stuff that I said when I was 16 or even 26, I'd probably be embarrassing myself. And I think that, you know, there's value in trying to communicate these ideas to people who are younger, who may not have had, you know, the resources in education or upbringing to get them to this sort of conclusion, and just help out younger people be a voice that can be instructive. I think it's better served for those conversations to largely be driven, again, by the impacted parties. But there's also something to be said of, you know, this doesn't directly on the surface impact me, and yet I advocate for these positions. And hopefully that gives it, you know, a little more staying power, a little more credibility.
Absolutely. And the last year has been, you know, I think it's actually been a really good year. You know, obviously Gabby has brought a lot of visibility to the game. The Magic the Amateuring Girls blowing up. We've certainly done our part. You know, because you've seen so much of the game, you see more of the community than we do. You know, we only get to go to so many events a year, but you've really traveled everywhere. And do you feel like you've noticed a difference? Like, when you go to these events, do you feel like you've seen more of a presence, or that there's been any growth?
I mean, there's a real long way to go, obviously. But now, compared to 2006, you know, 10 years ago, or 2001, when I was playing much more competitively and playing in the Pro Tours and such, it is a difference. I think just the demographics look a lot better. You go to a tournament and there's definitely more women in the room than there were 10 or 15 years ago. And I think also, if you look at the creative direction of Magic, the way that art and flavor and the quality and representation, we're also pretty far away from Earthbind being an acceptable piece of art that goes into sets. So there's a lot of work left to be done, but you can see that there's starting to be some dividends for the work.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I know recently there was, you know, all of the nonsense happening in North Carolina was a big thing. And, you know, we do have several trans players in the community. And I heard that there was some discussion, you know, at Star City and with Helen Bergio about what they're going to do about the bathroom situation, you know, because, you know, if I were to go to the GP, it could be illegal for me to use the restroom, which is terrible. And, you know, to see that they were sort of on top of that and saying, we're aware of the situation and we're going to see what we can do. You know, I feel like some games, it wouldn't even be a blip on the radar, where it'd be like, oh well, and they were like, no, we definitely want to see what we can do about this. And, you know, I think that was another sign to me of how progressive our game is.
And you know, there was not the same legislation, but an anti-gay accommodation legislation was passed in Indiana I think a few years back, and Gen Con in their own way via social media did apply some pressure and at least threatened to move the show, which I don't think would have been the case 10 or 15 years ago. And that's not to denigrate Gen Con specifically, but just the collective awareness, the place that the gaming community was at. You know, it's typically been a very, you know, heterosexual man fan servicey kind of environment, and I think slowly but surely we're becoming a lot more broad in who we encompass.
Our Woman of Excellence this week, we received a nomination for Charlotte Sable, who I personally know. She's fabulous. And our nominee, Alma, says, Charlotte is a level 3 judge. She currently lives in Finland. She has a Tumblr called Magic Judge, where she answers a whole lot of rules questions. Matt Tabak's Tumblr even mentions that rules questions should go directly to her. She is prolific, clear, quick, provides pictures of cards, makes explanatory infographs, and more. She does this all in her free time because she wants to, and she is a real treat to the Tumblr Magic community. And I agree. I've met Charlotte before, like I said. And whenever I hear her name, I feel like I'm reminded of like a Bond girl or like a Bond villain. Like Charlotte's Sable.
It's an intense name. It's a good name.
It is. It's definitely got some flair to it. Like whenever I hear the name, I immediately hear of the like the Bond thing. So you can find her Tumblr at magicjudge.tumblr.com. Thank you for being awesome, Charlotte. Katie, you played in the PPTQ this past weekend and made another top four.
Another top four I did. Another win I did not. yeah, I did. It was very small. The smallest PPTQ I've played in. It was a whole 12 people. And we had to play five rounds because Wizards requires it. So I went 3-1-1. And I was in third seed going in. And I ended up losing to a Dark Jeskai player that actually came up with us in the car from Bozeman. And he's a 16-year-old kid that we've kind of been, like, mentoring, and he's really improved over the past, you know, year or two. And he actually won the pre-TQ. He's made the finals of two previous PPTQs, so he was ready to win it this time, and he did, so he'll be going to the RPTQ.
Wow. You call him the future, yeah?
We call him the future Shea Bebe Dollar Dollar Bills, y'all. It's a long, long name.
So is that like a first, a middle, and a last name, or is that just...
That's like a lot of words to fit on a checkbook line. I'm not exactly sure which name is which, but they're all in there.
Okay, and what were you playing?
I was playing Mossy Mardu Party Time.
These names, man. Mossy Shebebe Future Part Man. Yeah. I need to hang with you guys.
It was really good. I felt like it was weak to Esper Dragons. I lost to Esper in the... in the Swiss, and it just seemed like maybe it was just the build of the deck that seemed to be in the room, but it was just like every time I played anything, they either had a counter spell or a removal spell, and you just like couldn't get much card advantage and couldn't get enough things to really put up a good fight. So that was unfortunate, but yeah, overall it was a good weekend.
Okay, are you excited for Innistrad Standard? Like, are you ready to say goodbye to the Standard?
Yes, I have not found a deck that I've really loved this Standard, so I'm hoping that with the shakeup, I can maybe settle more into a deck to keep through the whole season.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I know I have plans to go to GP Minneapolis, which isn't until the end of May, and you know we're going to talk about the Shadows Over Innistrad spoilers soon. But it's like I'm hoping that there's something there because you know I'm kind of like you. You know, I did enjoy Esper Dragons the brief time that I played it, but you know I spent much of the Standard just not really caring about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So Chris and I hung out this past weekend, and we got the chance to play a little card game called Epic, which was designed by Rob Doherty and Darwin Castle, who are two Hall of Famers in the Magic community, and I thought we had a lot of fun. You know, Chris, what did you think of the game?
I really liked it. I'm mostly amused because it mashes, like, so many different types of, like, fantasy and or sci-fi creatures into it. When I can have a raptor pack, that's pretty fucking baller. I found it interesting that you could cast, like, big fatties for just, like, one. Because you get a gold, what is it, at the beginning of every turn. And, like, everything costs, like, one or zero. And so I'm playing with Aaron and I dropped this fucking, like, 18-18, like, worm. Whatever, right? And it was...
With trample.
Yeah. I'm like, what the hell is this? It was just, like... It was just out of hand. But it was out of hand, like, in a fun way. It seemed like the games could be, like, really fast-paced. There was only, like, one time where we kind of had a little bit of a board stall. Because I was like, I'm just gonna keep making dudes. Because there was this, like, broken card that it cost... I think it was, what, one... One or zero, and it lets you cast it, and then if you reveal, or no, you play another spell that matches that color, then you can get like it back into your hand. So I was just like making zombies. It was just nuts. It was cool that there was a lot of mechanics that were similar to Magic, but you didn't get like mana screwed because of the one gold that you get every turn. So you're always guaranteed to be able to cast something. And even though there were, like, big imposing things on the board, there were ways to deal with them. So it wasn't like you were just fucked. Usually there was like some way to be able to deal with the threat that was there. There was only the four colors as opposed to in Magic. And I found it interesting that there were a lot of traits that are similar to cards in Magic that they also have, but they're not traditionally the same. Like, it seemed like the red cards encompassed a lot of things that black and red can both do. And you have, like, blue creatures that you can give haste to, but not in a traditional fashion. And I thought that that was pretty awesome. And I'm interested in, like, buying some of the booster packs to kind of see what you can come up with. And I would definitely play it again. I'm eager to teach other people how to play.
Yeah, there were several things I liked about Epic. I thought combat was really interesting. So, you know, the way that we do combat in Magic is, so like, let's say you're attacking with three creatures and you only have one creature. And obviously you can only block on a one for one, you know, basis. So two of those creatures are going to end up getting through and hitting your opponent. In Epic, if one creature blocks, they block everything. There's no like, okay, well, you have more creatures than me and so I'm going to take damage. That one creature is obviously going to die and is obviously going to take all of the damage, but all of the creatures are considered blocked, which I thought was really cool. I think Chris brought up a really good point of the there's no mana screw and there's no mana flood, and it makes you wonder, like, what would the game be like, you know, if you didn't draw five lands in a row, or if you did, you know, if you didn't have to worry about having no lands. You know, you're guaranteed to be able to do at least one thing with your turn, and that made it really cool, and that made the games go a lot faster too, like you described. Another interesting thing is that in Magic, if you're not able, like, so let's say you get down to like one card in your library or no cards in your library, and if you draw a card, you lose the game. Like, you can be milled out, basically. In Epic, it's the opposite. If you do that and you have no card to draw, you win the game. So that was a nice little, you know, turning the tables effect. It was a lot of fun. Like Chris said, there were a lot of concepts that were very similar to Magic. Like, they have their version of trample and their version of haste and their version of, you know, buyback or flashback and things like that. But yet it still had a lot of its own unique concepts. Like, there were T-Rexes and there were raptors and there were lions and, you know, angels and things like that. And it seemed like it was really affordable too. Each of the boxes that you buy are called sets, and you can build up to four decks with whatever's in that box. And so, you know, you could divide them up four ways, or you can draft with it, and it's just a win on a number of levels. It's just a lot more affordable. It's quicker. It's easier to understand. You also can't respond to things. There are only certain times on an opponent's turn that you can do something, and none of them are like relevant. You know, so like if Chris goes to kill something of mine, I can't respond to it. It's just, it has to happen. But and so I thought that was really cool too, because Magic can get really bogged down in the stack, and, well, I'm going to respond to this and activate this, and this was just really easy to digest. So I'm like Chris, I'd love to play this again, and I actually have three boxes here. I think I gave you one, right? Okay, and I have two boxes here, so Hallie or Katie, if you're interested, I can certainly send you one as well.
Sweet. Cool. I've heard a lot of like debate about the resource thing, because I used to play the WoW TCG card game, and it was, you know, you can lay down a card like face down if you don't have a resource to play, and you can use that as like a mana, basically. And I've heard a lot of debate from people about whether or not the variance of mana screw and Magic makes it good or bad. I've heard some people that are like, that's what made Magic great, like, in its own way and as a more skill testing format, and some people, you know, are obviously like, no, I don't ever want to get mana screwed. But that's just interesting that you guys brought that up.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, as kind of our, you know, you have game design experience, obviously, you know, what do you think about this? You know, do you think that something like Mana Skewer, Mana Flood, you know, and the variance that comes with it, do you think that that's needed for a game, or do you think that Epic's kind of onto something with getting rid of that?
So I was the development lead on the WoW TCG for a couple of years, so I'm pretty familiar with the, you know, what are the pros and cons of having guaranteed resources. The biggest upshot is just everyone kind of gets to play every single game. There is a percentage of games of Magic, you know, mulligans to five, miss your second land drop, where you're just not getting to play. And those games can be pretty frustrating, especially when they're in competitive high leverage spots. There are development issues that come with guaranteed resources. Like a seven drop in Magic, that card maybe is coming out on turn four or five if there's mana acceleration, or maybe it's not coming out at all because someone doesn't get to their seventh mana. They just stop at six or five or whatever. in WoW, not only, or games like that, not only is it going to happen, you know exactly the turn it's going to happen on. So the games can become a lot more scripted, and the replayability suffers. And I think when people talk about, you know, there's not enough variance in the game, it's not just about, is the worst player still winning frequently enough for the game to be fun, although that is part of it. It's just, we've played 50 or 100 games. Do all the games feel different? Do we still feel like we're discovering something, or have we kind of figured out what's happening in this matchup or in this metagame, and there's not much discovery left? So I think the biggest cost that you pay with those resource systems is just, you lose some replayability. And, you know, I've been playing Magic for 20 years and don't feel bored with it at all and still feel like I'm discovering it. And the high variance resource system is a large contributor to that.
Interesting. So, Hallie, you tuned into the limited Loading Ready Run. It did an online pre-release for Shadows Over Innistrad. They got their hands on the cards before anybody else, and you got a chance to watch it.
Yeah, I spent most of the day watching it, actually, because it was, you know, broadcast in Pacific time. I happened to live on the West Coast, so it was convenient. There were no PPTQs going on that Saturday, so I decided to just hang out at home, spend a relaxing day with my dog, and just watch the pre-release, as they were calling it. And it was a lot of fun. They had Marshall Sutcliffe, Kenji Egashira, Athena Huey, and Jimmy Wong all over to their compound in Victoria to play some Shadows Over Innistrad Limited. And the set seemed really fun. There were definitely a lot of very high synergy decks and a lot of big flavor wins. Jimmy Wong's deck had a lot of clue production and a lot of synergies to go with that. There were some really cool interactions that we saw, like there's a creature called Insolent Neonate, which is basically a madness fueler. It allows you to discard a card and sacrifice it to draw a card. And there's also an enchantment called Skin Invasion that enchants a creature. It says the creature has to attack every turn, and when that creature dies, you transform it into a 3/4 creature, which is essentially free, basically. So Graham Stark had those two cards in his deck, and he had these cool synergies where he got to put the equipment on the creature, sacrifice it to draw a card and enable madness, and also get a 3/4 creature, which was really cool. It also seemed like red was incredibly powerful in the set, so red mages, this is definitely the set for you.
Well, I'll sit this one out.
Yeah, of the eight people who participated in the pre-release, seven of them were playing red, and the eighth was splashing red because he had a Nahiri in his pool that he decided to play in his deck. So red seemed very strong. The red-black aggressive decks seemed really great. Kenji ended up winning the whole thing with an aggressive red-black deck. And yeah, I'm just stoked to play this set. It seems really cool.
How is green in this set?
We didn't see a whole lot of green, but it seemed reasonably strong. I believe there were three players who were on green. Marshall and Cam from Loading Ready Run were playing red-green werewolf mid-range decks, which seemed pretty strong. And Jimmy was playing a green-white clues deck that had a lot of clue synergies and human tribal synergies. A lot of the cards in green seemed like very synergy based, but it seemed like there were enough enablers to make them worth it.
And you said the clues were really important. Like they saw a lot. They were really useful.
Yeah, it did seem like they were important. At least if you can build a synergistic deck that allows for them, you know, being able to sacrifice a permanent and draw a card, just getting these, generating clues and then getting further into your deck to find answers or to find threats, just seemed incredibly powerful. So I think they may not necessarily scale well throughout the game. I think they may be a little more important, you know, the first three or four clues may be more important than the ones going down the line, but I think they seemed pretty good.
Yeah, I'm really interested in the cards where it's like, I'm not just interested in sacrificing the clues for cards. There's actually a couple cards in the set where you sacrifice a clue and something happens. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested to see if those cards, you know, can do anything or if it's going to be worthwhile to build with them in our sealed pools. So I actually tried watching the event myself and the chat was going by so fast. Like people were really hype about this.
There were a ton of people watching too. I think Loading Ready Run said that it was their most watched stream ever, which is saying a lot.
The production value was really nice too. They had some, like, I guess some new trailers or some new things. I'm trying to think of the word I'm looking for, but
they had a number of ads that were playing in between rounds, which were pretty good. And they also they had this custom card recognition software where they had a camera positioned over the table, sort of at the midline between the two players. And if you put the card under it, if you put a card right there under the camera would pick it up and put an image of the card on the screen so that the players at home, the people, you know, the viewers at home could see it. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, particularly for a pre-release where, like, people just don't know what the cards are. Just being able to post the images is pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And they had Serge Jaeger, I think was his name, who was the judge on hand. Mm-hmm. People love Serge.
Oh, yeah.
As they should. So, Hallie, you know, the whole set has been revealed. We know all the cards are in the set. So what are some of the cards that you're looking forward to?
Oh, God, where do I even start? there's so much flavor in this set. I really enjoy a lot of the flip cards and seeing, you know, the transformation of, you know, some of the creatures. I think there's one creature that's sort of like a woman who's like nursing a bird back to health. And then on the other side, she's like a werewolf and she's crushing the bird. Like, I just love those kinds of things. My favorite card in the set is going to have to be Arlen, though. I mean, not having played with the set at all, but she seems really sweet, great flavor, really strong card in general, and fits the strategies that I really like to play, you know, powerful mid-range decks. So I'm really excited to see what she'll have to offer in Standard.
Katie, what are you looking forward to?
For Standard, I'm looking forward to Sorin. I'm also, like Hallie, where I'm kind of excited about the flavor in this set, because that's usually not really my MO, but I'm excited for Sorin. I want to put him in a control deck, and I just want to win. and then for, like, limited, whether it's draft or sealed, I feel like Pack Guardian has a lot of potential. He's the double green and two for a 4/3 with flash, and when he enters, you can discard a land and get a 2/2. I think he seems very strong, and I really want to see somebody win with Westvale Abbey, which is the land that turns into a 9/7. Because I just think that'll be sweet. I expect something from Chris Preston. Chris.
Is it bad that that's who I thought of when I saw it? I was like, what is this? Oh my god.
And then I think my favorite card was Inexorable Blob, because he just looks like how I feel a lot of the time, and I just really identified with him.
You identified with Inexorable Blob.
Yeah, dude, look at him. He's, like, kind of cute. And he brings his little friends, and they attack, and he's just chill. I don't know. I just really like that card.
Katie the Blob Neal.
That's what they call me.
Chris, what are you looking forward to?
Wow, there were so many cards when I was sitting down trying to think of, like, how I was going to separate them into categories. I was like, these are the cards I really like, and these are the cards that maybe I could do something with, and these are the cards that I was just kind of like, this is kind of weird. And a lot of the cards I'm excited for are blue cards, I will admit. But there's also some sprinklings in there that are not. Like, I think A Cursed Witch looks really awesome. I really like that it can transform into that, like, infectious curse, and that the spells that you cast that target the enchanted player that you enchant cause one less to cast, and at the beginning of their upkeep, they lose one life and you gain one life. And I like that concept. I also thought Vessel of Paramnesia looked cool as well. There's just so many cards that I just cannot wait to get my hands on because I just want to play with them. Rattle Chains, because I love spirits and it looks pretty dope. And there were some green cards that I was kind of like trying to warm up to as well, because I was like, man, it just looks like so much fun. Like the Soul Swallower looks like a delightful fellow. Like, I actually kind of want to have someone, like, alter that for me and put, like, a top hat on his head, because I think he needs one of those. And then there were some cards that I was just kind of confused about. Like, Fevered Visions was one of those cards I just didn't really get. I'm trying to remember what it did, too, but it was just something I couldn't wrap my head around. And I want to see what people are going to do with Brain in the Jar, because there's been a lot of pre-orders, it seems like, for that card, and I just want to know, like, what you're going to do with it. So, yeah, there's a lot of things. I just can't wait until this weekend, because I'm just going to pre-release my brains out, so I'm excited.
Patrick, is there anything here that excites you?
Kind of the whole set. I mean, I'm, you know, much more on the outside looking in of competitive play at this point, I would say, and I just like seeing all the really cool, flavorful designs. Like, I think if this is the first set, or, you know, original Innistrad was the first set that I ever played, that I would have been a Magic player for life. And that's pretty high praise. You know, not every set crosses that bar, but there's so many just really cool, resonant, you know, fantasy and horror trope designs. In terms of specifically for competitive play, I mean, a lot of people are talking about what they perceive the most powerful cards to be, and the Planeswalkers are super good. I think there's a chance that Gear Reach Bandit, if you're into red beatdown decks, is a little bit better than people are expecting, just because the front side, you know, three power haste for three is already something I'm often in the market to play, and the backside is not trivial. So that's something I could see myself trying to build around, either just in a red beatdown deck or trying to do, you know, the werewolf transformy thing if there's some expensive ones or so forth.
Yeah, the cards I'm excited by are probably pretty predictable. Like, you're not going to be surprised, but I'm very excited about Thing in the Ice, or as I like to call her, Miss Thing in the Ice. So I'm very excited about that. It's going for $20 pre-order right now, so apparently I'm not the only one who's excited about it, which is really cool. I may even pair it with the Delver of Secrets. Who knows?
That's what
you kids do. I know, right? I still have my Snapcaster mages, too. Do you know how many disappointed tweets I got from people that were like, Aaron, we were counting on you, and now you own Snapcaster mages. What have you done?
We don't need those haters in our life.
It's all your fault. All your fault.
And at least you're trying to do something cool. You know, you're not trying to just nickel and dime someone with bolts and inquisitions. Like, you're trying to flip Thing in the Ice. That's a noble goal to try to use Snapcaster for.
Thank you. So the other blue card that I was actually really excited about is Invasive Surgery, and this kind of falls in the same category that Chris said, where it's like you have the cards that you know you're going to use, and then you have the cards that you're kind of fantasizing over. And I have fantasies of using Invasive Surgery as a sideboard card in Dredge. And one of the problems we have is with Miracles, because they just whack off a Terminus and we can never get ahead. And I was like, if I can counter a Terminus, and Delirium's not hard for a Dredge deck to have, if I can counter Terminus and then yoink all your Terminuses, that cuts down on a lot of the things I have to worry about. So I fantasize about that card working in Dredge. Call the Bloodline, I think, is fantastic. I think that could be Zombie Infestation 5 and 6 and Zombie Loam. Obviously, Zombie Infestation is better, but the deck runs so much better when you have a discard outlet. And making sure that you have one of those in hand, both isn't bad either, but, you know, making sure that you have at least one of those in hand is a way to make the deck a lot better. I'm very excited about Ever After. I think that's just so much win right there. Hashtag relationship goals. Come on. It's literally, it's a groom and a bride, and they're dead and they're together. Like, that's romantic. Aww. Come on. See, how romantic. You guys don't know that. I do like Relentless Dead. I think that card's awesome, but I think everybody agrees with me. I do like Sinister Concoction as well. That's the enchantment where you pay one blacks, lose a life, discard a card, and sacrifice it and destroy something. I think that could also be fun in Zombie Loam, because we sometimes have problems with, you know, a creature like Scavenging Ooze, and also it's just a great way to get a dredger into the graveyard. Triskai Decaphobia is my favorite card in the whole set. I was actually wide awake when this card was previewed. It was previewed really, really late at night. It was around midnight or something, and I just laughed. I laughed for a good 5 minutes, and I wasn't laughing at it, but I was just because something kept coming up. Or like, the card itself was awesome, but then it was like, well, there's 13 blood droplets, 13, you know, silverware things hanging up, 13 stones, and every time I would discover something new, I would just laugh. I'd be like, this card is amazing. And so I think this is fantastic, and if somebody were to ever do something with it, I would be completely on board with it. And then obviously the last card I'm really excited about is Prized Amalgam. I think that's also going to be really good in some kind of dredge list. I know Manalist Dredge is really excited about it, and Zombie Loam is interested in it as well. I don't think Legacy Dredge is. The one card I'm not excited about is the Gitrog Monster.
More like the Get Wrecked Monster.
And it's funny, because this is the card that everybody tagged me in and was like, you're going to love this. And I was like, I don't. So I don't think it's that great. And so I think people were a little disappointed, because literally I woke up in the morning and I was just tagged, and it was just like, oh god. And I had to break a couple hearts on that one, so I don't think that card is very good. But otherwise, I do think the set is awesome. I'm actually going to be playing in the pre-release this weekend, which I haven't done in a while, and I'm just really looking forward to playing some of these cards. So there was an article going around the other day that got a lot of people talking from Brian Brown Duin, and it was called "A Draw Should Be Worth 0 Points." And I think Ross Merriam and Eric Froelich also brought this up too, or something similar to this recently, and just kind of talking about how much conceding and collusion, you know, goes on in the game, and how, you know, it's not necessarily destroying the game, but it definitely does affect, you know, the status quo. And, you know, BBD's, you know, proposition was to basically make draws worthless. And I didn't really understand a lot of this. So maybe, you know, Hallie and Katie, as more of our more competitive people, you know, what does this mean to you? Like, do you agree with this?
I'm actually not sure how I feel about it. I know when I first started playing Magic, I was really turned off by the idea of intentional draws, just because I came to Magic from chess. I played a little bit of chess, and I hung out with a lot of competitive chess players. And in that culture, drawing is basically outlawed. If you make any attempt to draw out the game, it's considered cheating, and it essentially results in a loss. And so I came in feeling like, you know, there's something a little weird about this, and I've just sort of accepted it and internalized it as, oh, this is a part of the game, it's not going to go away, this is something that I need to do that is just often, you know, advantageous to me, you know, in the later rounds of a tournament if I'm, you know, trying to top 8 a PPTQ or something like that. But I don't think I mean, I need to think about this a bit more, obviously, but I think, you know, there are definitely a lot of implications to it, as BBD mentioned. You know, a lot would have to be done, you know, possibly with changing tiebreakers, because tiebreakers would become much more important if there were no such things as draws anymore, or, you know, if people were less incentivized to draw, I should say. I don't know. It's definitely something to think about, and I think I might be okay with it if this were the case.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as Hallie. I remember when I was, like, I think it was my first pre-release, and I had a shot for top 8 in one of the tournaments, and somebody was, like, helping me do math or whatever, and people ended up drawing in and having it be a lock, and I was like, what, they don't even have to play Magic and they just get to win? That's, like, not fair. I want to win. And obviously now, like most competitive players, like once you kind of figure out how to make it work, it's quite advantageous. But I did really like what the article was saying. I mean, all of the points were very sound. And I do think that if this was implemented, I'd be like, all right, yeah, let's do it. But I also don't feel like I'd be like pushing for it, I guess. I'm not like a huge proponent of it. But I also would kind of like to see it in action, because I do think, I mean, nobody likes a really long Magic tournament, and the people that go to time, and then nobody wants to concede, and a lot of people seem to be upset when somebody asks for a concession when they get to time, and it's just kind of a lot of, like, bad feelings, and I do think that they could be mitigated through making draws worthless.
Chris or Patrick, do you have any thoughts on this?
For me, I like the idea of anything that cuts down on dirtling and people just sitting there being like, I got nothing to do, but I'm just going to keep passing to you and like, you can't kill me. And now we're just sitting here flailing at each other, because there's been enough times that I've drawn and it wasn't anything necessarily that I did per se, but just that my opponent, you know, couldn't kill me, or they were just, you know, in a position that they just couldn't do anything, and that I've just been frustrated because it's like, well, I still had things I could do, but it was just taking so long to get there, and I just kind of hate that a little bit. I like the idea of concessions happening more if people would gracefully say, you know what, you could have gotten there, we just didn't have enough time, you know, congrats to you. Unfortunately, there, I think, are some people that they just don't have that kind of good sportsmanship attitude, so I don't know if everyone would go for that, but I think that that is something positive that could come out of this. And I also noticed in the article he talked about having higher stakes for viewership. So you're not just like watching two people that are like, okay, well, we both drew in. There's nothing on the line, because I'm a sucker for like the conclusion to like a good like 80s movie where you got the dude that's like down on his luck and he's like, got to win the girl back, or, you know, you're the Karate Kid and you got to win that fucking tournament. And I'm all about that. So, you know, I like feeling like there's something to fight for. So I would kind of like to see that more.
So from my perspective, I don't think that making draws worth zero works for two reasons. One is some draws occur organically. And I think it's just too punishing to both players to have draws worth zero. And the other is, I think it makes the collusion problem worse, because if you and I are playing round one, we're about to draw, it's not clear who's going to win the game. We're just going to sit there and stare at each other, and there's going to be an expectation that one person is going to concede the match. So I don't think it solves the collusion problem. I think the real problem is with the tiebreaker system. I think this is where most of the harm is done, because it just gives players too much information to work with. Your collusion is a lot more precise, because you and I are playing at table three. We know we're safe if we draw. The people playing at table five are worst breakers. They know they can't draw. They have to play the match out, et cetera, et cetera. I would prefer a system where, you know, basically random drawings among the eligible records to fill out top eight slots rather than having tiebreakers. So let's say X and three is going to be good enough for two people at top eight and everyone else misses, instead of having a tiebreaker system where, you know, the people with the best breakers are the people who come in seventh and eighth. DCI reporter just randomly draws two people out of the eligible X and threes.
Yeah, I like that. You know, I think that, you know, I don't know. I admit I don't understand much of what BBD was saying, and that's completely my fault, you know. But I didn't really, you know, I remember when I did the GPT a couple weeks ago, you know, it was like, you know, and even looking back on states, and we went to SCG states back in October, it was like, you know, I knew what my record was, and it was like, well, and I've never been the one to like suggest to draw. Like, I'm not math girl. And I think, Hallie, I even sent you like the picture, and I was like, can I draw in? And you had to do the math for me, because I just didn't understand what it meant. And, you know, you were like, well, your record's really good, but it comes down to your breakers. And, like, you know, I think even you guys with your PPTQ stories, it comes down to breakers so much of the time. And, you know, I think you bring up a really good point, Patrick, that the tiebreakers have more, you know, weight on them than we realize.
Yeah, and it's just not an opaque system either. I mean, we sort of know, yeah, the later you go on in the tournament, if you're winning, the tiebreakers are going to be better. And if you lose a couple rounds early on and then rattle off some wins, your breakers are going to be worse among your record. But no one really, I think very few people really know what the tiebreakers even mean. They just know whose number is higher. And I think that the relationship between who has good breakers and who had a harder tournament is pretty loose to begin with. And I think the cost of having that information publicly available and allowing people to be very precise with their collusions, concessions, intentional draws, and so forth is a big root of the problem with the amount of collusion and bribery that occurs in most big Magic tournaments.
Our last topic for the week, our lady of everything, Gabby Spartz. I mean, she really is awesome. Let's just lay it out there.
Yes.
So Gabby made an announcement on her Facebook page that she's going to be stepping away from Dose, the company that she, you know, helped found, taking a sabbatical from that to focus entirely on Magic. She's going to be streaming full time, and she's going to be doing a lot more coverage. And this was, you know, really well received. You know, we're all big fans of Gabby. You know, what did you guys think about this?
I was really proud of her. Oh, sorry. You go on, Hallie.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Chris.
I was just like, now's my chance. I was really proud of her for doing it. Like, not that anyone needs to be proud of her for anything, but I was just like, you know, that's awesome. You know, saying, you know, this is something that, you know, I helped contribute to, that, you know, I've spent like the majority of my time on, but now I want to focus on something else, something, you know, that I've given a lot of myself and my heart to. And, you know, it's something that she really wants. And fuck, if I could like just quit my job for a little while or something and, you know, focus on something that really meant a lot to me, I would love to do that. So I'm really eager to see what she does, you know, with this time, and, you know, try to watch more of her streams since she's going to be more available for that. And of course, to see her on coverage, because she's done an amazing job so far.
Yeah, I think this seemed like a very natural next step for her. She's been devoting increasingly more time to magic over the last year or so that I've been, you know, following her. She's been, you know, contributing to the community, you know, streaming more, doing coverage, you know, all the things that she's been doing have just sort of culminated in this. I know, you know, a number of people in the community, you know, Marshall Sutcliffe comes to mind immediately, have decided to step away from their, you know, quote unquote day jobs to focus on magic coverage. And I think it's pretty natural for Gabby to do the same thing.
Yeah, it seems like I guess I was just really proud of her for taking the opportunity, because sometimes when an opportunity that's kind of life-changing presents itself, it can be a difficult thing to do. Like, you know, last year I was kind of looking at coverage and I was like, well, I can't drop out of school, and you know, this isn't really like my real life. This is my magic life. And I think it's just really awesome that she was able to be like, no, I am going to, you know, try this out and see where it goes, because you know, sometimes the opportunity arises and it just needs to be taken. So I'm really excited to watch her on coverage more. I thought she was great, so I'm excited to see where she goes.
Yeah, I mean, and from what I can gather, I mean, we're friends. I wouldn't say that I'm particularly tight with her, but she seemed very successful with her professional endeavors, so walking away from that is a pretty big leap. But I think she's a very serious coverage talent. I think she's a very serious magic talent in general. I mean, she's been just beating the shit out of people in the super leagues for like a year now, or a year and a half now, or whatever. So I think it's just it's great she's taking the leap. I mean, I don't know all the risks and rewards, but to jump in with both feet like that is never a small thing, and it's just great to see someone take the leap.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of hers for a while, and I really appreciated in her announcement that she mentioned, you know, women in magic, and that was a big reason that she even got into the community or more involved in the community. She was like, you know, I set out to, you know, increase the visibility for women in magic and to hopefully get more women involved. And Gabby's always been very subtle about that. You know, she hasn't necessarily been as outspoken about it, but it's always been, you know, kind of an undercurrent of everything that she's done. And I think that that's worked for her. I think that's worked to her advantage. And I think that, you know, some people might forget that's always been her drive. Like, she's always been here for that reason. And to see her once again bring that up and say, you know, while I have had all of the success, you know, a big part of it is I can do more. Like, I've done so much, but, you know, to see her be so selfless and say, you know, while I am benefiting from these things, I can use this platform to do more. And I thought that was really cool of her, because it would have been very easy for her to be like, I'm awesome, and I'm going to keep being awesome. And she was like, I've got more work to do here. And I thought that was really cool of her. And I think that she's definitely, you know, the one to do it.
And a big thing too is just, I when you talk about, you know, we want better representation in magic, we want, you know, not just a bunch of white dudes being the visible people. A lot of people, the snap response is, well, that's going to detract from merit. We're just going to be having these charity cases doing X, Y, and Z. And the point is that the talent is out there. You need to go out and pursue it. And Gabby is, you know, at the top or near the top of that list. She's no charity case. The talent is out there. You just have to make the effort to go and pursue it and find it and cultivate it. And for wizards and for them and for magic in general, cultivating her talent has paid enormous dividends.
Yeah, you know, I think the one thing I've really enjoyed from seeing her and even Athena, you know, Athena did well when she was at the GP Oakland, you know, the argument that we kept hearing about was, you know, because coverage was sort of like the last frontier, you know, and it was the one thing we'd really wanted to get a woman into. And the one thing we kept hearing from all of the, you know, from the event providers was, well, it's so difficult. And, you know, Jackie and Melissa are gone, so who else is there? And, you know, Athena and Gabby just made it seem so easy, where it's like, you know, I'm sure that they did some, you know, maybe some practice, or I know Gabby did a test run at like a World Magic Cup qualifier or something, but you know, people made it sound like it was going to be so difficult to get a woman in the booth, and they both just kind of went in and killed it. And I thought that was really great, because you know, for so long it had been, well, there's no one experienced, and it's going to take all this training, and it's going to take all this practice, and they just kind of slid into those roles really easily. And so I would like to think that that kind of changed people's minds, that like, you don't necessarily need, you know, this long resume, or you don't necessarily need all of these GP finishes to do the thing. So, speaking of coverage, I understand that somebody has an announcement to make.
Yeah. So, I do have some really exciting news to share. I will be joining the coverage team at Wizards of the Coast starting in May as a writer. I'll be doing event coverage starting with GP Los Angeles. So, I'm really excited about that. something I've been working towards for a really long time, and I'm glad that it's finally happening.
Boo fucking yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm throwing confetti in your direction, Hallie.
Oh, yay. I should finally get Snapchat so I can see the confetti.
So you're saying that you might be the one covering my charity round one feature match in Los Angeles?
That is very
cool. That is exciting. Great to hear.
Oh, man. I didn't even know. I just found out that GPLA was modern. And I was like, well, I wasn't going to go because it was standard. And then now that I saw, you know, Hallie was like, well, I'm going to be there. And then Chris is like, well, Charlotte's starting to suck, so I'm going to go to LA. And I was like, LA is standard, you guys. And then I looked it up today and I'm like, oh, it's modern? I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. So I may have to make a detour and come to LA. And you're not going to come, Katie?
I will be in Ireland for a month. So I will not be there. Yeah.
Lucky
Ireland. Oh, I get it. No, Ireland's going to be awesome.
I'm really excited. We're actually doing like a week in Ireland, a week in France, and a week in Italy, and then, you know, days to recuperate and whatnot on either end. But my parents were actually asking me, they're like, do you want to go to like some local game stores and you want to go play Magic? And so I think I'm going to try and do that. And maybe, you know, I mean, we have a lot of worldwide listeners, so if you live in one of those three places, I might be around somewhere. So I'm really excited to just kind of see what their differences and similarities are, because I've been to a lot of local game stores in America, but that doesn't mean that, you know, in Europe they might be different. They might be exactly the same, except I don't know what they're saying. So
I wonder what their bathrooms are like.
I'll take pictures. We'll document the whole thing.
You'll have to. You'll have to start like a photo blog or something of like, you know, the Magic game stores of Europe. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, Katie sure. Abroad.
Katie Abroad. I love it.
Katie Abroad, I love it. Neil.
Well, I don't know about that. That could be...
That could be interpreted different ways.
Right. Well, I know there's that, there are those guys that do the Magic the Traveling, and they play Magic in strange places, like mountains and bars and beaches, and so, you know, you could totally play it like Stonehenge, you could play it like the Leaning Tower, like, you should totally do it.
Yeah, I think
I'm psyched. Gotta do it, Katie.
Okay, I'll do the
Katie Abroad. Oh, man. And you're not gonna be, you mentioned something about possibly only recording, like, a couple shows that month. Maybe we could do, like, a Where in the World is Matt Lauer thing, but, like, Where in the World is Katie Neal?
Yeah, that could be a possibility.
Mm-hmm. There's so many things we could do with you.
Use me at your will.
Oh, my.
Sorry, I was just going to ask, do you know in Ireland where you're going?
Well, we will be in Dublin. I want to go up to Giant's Causeway, and I haven't gotten farther than that. I'm open to any and all recommendations.
I went there in high school, and I got family back in the old country and Ireland. I if I could have a job there, sustain a living, I would move there in a second.
Just go be a sheep farmer.
I've become accustomed to a certain lifestyle here in Los Angeles. That I don't know if I could pivot and become a sheep farmer. I think that would be a challenging transition.
Oh, man. I can just imagine that now, like... Okay. So it's safe to say that we're all to be pre-releasing this weekend. Anything else before we wrap up the show?
Is Hallie doing like 12 pre-releases?
Yeah, what are your plans, Hallie?
I'm only doing four.
Only four.
We have this joke on the show, Patrick, that Hallie's going to have one of those packs. You know, sometimes you see the backpacks with like the beverage tank in them and then the straw that wraps around, and she's just going to have that in her mouth and just stay hydrated. And
yeah, only four.
Gotta stay hydrated.
That's at least three more than I'm doing.
Or we like to imagine her with like the Rocky theme and her doing like chin-ups and stuff and getting ready. She's hardcore, man.
She is.
She don't play.
Yeah.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to us on the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can watch my stream at twitch.tv/HalCanSan. And you can find my writing here on Gathering Magic.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger, that's MeanMugger, and on Twitch, twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG. I'm going to try and do a stream this weekend, one of the flashback drafts, so look out for that.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at TEHKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ@gmail.com. And my Snapchat is Cryptic Command with K's.
Patrick, do you Snapchat?
I do not. I'm a big old fogey when it comes to just most internet related things. Like getting a Facebook was a huge jump, getting Twitter was a huge jump, and I'm not ready to Snapchat just yet.
No, so see, it's funny because I had to teach, I was walking Patrick through how to get onto the Google Drive and everything, and it took him a couple tries to get it, but once he did, he was freaking hooked. He's like, I'm going to upload this, and I should upload this, and I'm like, do you need a minute? Like,
my girlfriend's definitely a Snapchatter. We went to the Clippers game on Sunday, and it's right next to the LA Convention Center, and WonderCon was going on, which is like a Comic-Con sort of thing, and so there's all these food trucks lined up. And we're trying to find something to eat. And I guess Kate noticed someone Snapchatting the food truck. And she goes, why would someone Snapchat a food truck? And I responded, why would anyone Snapchat anything? Which some people around us found to be very funny. So I think I'm going to guess 4 or 5 years away from a Snapchat. But for the time being, you can find me on Twitter at Basic Mountain. You cannot find me on Twitch because I do not stream unless I'm doing the Star City things, which I'll be doing April 14th and 15th-ish for the Invitational. And you can find my writing on Star City Games roughly once every 6 months, because that's about as frequently as I write an article.
Yeah, it has been so much fun having you on the show, Patrick. Thank you for coming on with us, and thank you for just, like I said, we're all big fans of yours, and we love what you do, and we just want you to keep it up.
Well, the feeling is mutual, and a real honor to be on the show. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That is OriginalOestrus. You can email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/thegirlfriendbracket. And you can find us every Friday at gatheringmagic.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.